Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Saving the planet sounds good, very good. Step one for most people is simple recycling. In most communities on garbage day, you see a separate bin or crate or something alongside the regular trash. Maybe several for glass, paper, metal, more. But how well do you understand the net benefit economically and environmentally? Some argue it's not even there. This hour on Point, we're looking very closely at recycling. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you make of the critique out there of recycling? Can you make out the bottom line? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Plenty of support for it. Plenty of encouragement to do it. Here's a recent public service announcement for recycling in Minnesota's St. Louis County.
A lot has changed since we started our recycling program in St. Louis County. But the message is still the same. Recycling helps save our lovely resources, the energy we use, and saves everyone money.
Children singing, strings soaring, what's not to love? And here in New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio, in a speech in April on Earth Day, announced his goal, other cities aiming for this too, for zero landfill waste, think recycling, for the Big Apple by the year 2030. De Blasio.
Zero waste for our landfills. This is an extraordinary commitment and a necessary one, and one that we need to see emulated in other places. We're going to constantly drive down the amount of waste we create through composting, through better recycling. We're going to constantly drive that down to the point that nothing goes from New York City to a landfill in the future.
That sounds great. What's the bottom line? Economically, environmentally, there's a critique out there. John Tierney has pushed it. We start our hour with him in New York. He writes the findings column for the science section of the New York Times, stirred up a lot of controversy and some hard pushback back in 2006 with a piece titled Recycling is Garbage. Now he's done it again with a follow-up piece, headline, The Reign of Recycling. He's basically calling recycling a waste. You can find a link to his essay at our website, onpointradio.org. John Tierney, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
What is the case you make, sir?
It was adopted with the idea that we're running out of resources and there's no room left in landfills. There was this crisis mentality. It turns out that neither of those things is true. And it makes sense to recycle some things like, you know, metal and paper and cardboard in some places. But trying to recycle everything just makes no sense. It's very expensive and it doesn't do much for the environment.
Let's look at the two sides of that. On the economic bottom line, does it make sense for municipalities? Do they end up saving money by, you know, essentially selling, what, paper and aluminum and all the rest?
Well, it's very tough to sell some of the stuff. Paper and aluminum make some sense. The big problem with recycling in some places, especially New York, is that it's much, much more expensive to collect it. And if New York City had not started a recycling program in the 1990s, it would have saved at least $1 billion by now. I mean, it's much more expensive to collect, and you don't really get much money back from it afterwards. So it always depends on the local economics, but in general, the cheapest thing to do is to put stuff in a landfill.
What about the landfill side of this, John? The notion that, look, we can't cover our country in garbage. We produce so much. We're big consumers. A lot into our homes and a lot out. We'd be nowhere for it to go, and we'd be all living in a sea of garbage.
Well, that's the idea people have, but all the garbage that Americans would produce for the next 1,000 years would fit on something like 0.001% of the open land we have. And, people thought that we were running out of landfill space, and that's why they thought that recycling would make economic sense. But, in fact, there's plenty of space in landfills, and there's plenty of room to build more. And you don't really cover that land. I mean, it's true that you put garbage there, but then after you fill up a landfill, you cover it with grass, and it becomes a park. And or a golf course or something like that. I mean, we have the old landfill in New York, you know, Freskills is being turned into a beautiful park right now. So the reason that recycling doesn't make economic sense is that there is room in landfills and that we haven't run out of space, and we're not going to either.
What about all the landfill leaching, you know, sort of garbage juice trickling down into the earth, and the methane, the gases coming up off all that organic garbage?
Well, the leaking stuff isn't really that much of a problem, even in the old dumps, and those things are online. But new landfills now, they have to have linings, they have to be monitored, and they really pose a pretty small environmental problem. The methane, you're right, that is a problem with landfills, but they're starting now to recapture that and to burn it to make electricity. So when you look at the overall environmental impacts of landfilling versus recycling, the main benefit comes from avoiding energy from making new stuff in the first place. It's not so much the problem of landfills and modern incinerators also for people who do that, which is done in Europe and Japan. That is, you know, there's very little pollution on that too. So there is some environmental benefit, you know, some fewer greenhouse gases are emitted as a result, but the main benefits from that come from paper and from cardboard and from metals. And the other stuff for glass, for plastics, and for food waste, there's really minimal, you know, carbon benefits from that, and it's just an expensive thing to do.
I mean, let's say, how do you calculate that? Let's say we were, okay, it may not economically add up, it may cost us something, it may cost New York $1 billion over a bunch of years, but if there's an environmental benefit, we're willing to do it. Is it a close call by your calculation, John? It's a big claim that only the paper and metal pay off in environmental terms. How could the others not?
Because you don't really save much energy from doing it. I mean, when you recycle aluminum can.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you recycle paper or cardboard or metal, on average, for every ton that you recycle, you save about 3 tons of carbon.
That
now,
sounds
even
great.
At that, it's a pretty expensive way to save carbon, though. Hmm. I mean, if New York City had put that $1 billion into other things like planting trees or doing other things, it probably could have done a lot more to reduce carbon and save money in the process. But the other stuff for plastics and for glass and for food waste, you don't really save that much carbon because it just isn't that much more efficient to do it. You're not people have this intuitive belief that that if it's good to recycle something, it's good to recycle everything. And when you look at the environmental calculations, and the article I did relies on the Environmental Protection Agency and you know, their estimates for all these things, mm-hmm. and economists and environmental engineers have done big calculations looking at all these environmental impacts because, you know, there are environmental impacts from recycling, too. I mean, you've got extra trucks on the road. You've got extra problems with that. Composting plants can be a real, you know, nuisance to the neighbors when you have that. When you look at that, you know, the benefits just aren't that big. One economist that I quote figures that if you put a $15 per ton tax basically a carbon tax on garbage that goes to a landfill, that would pretty much balance out the environmental impacts.
What would you do with that money that would balance it out?
Well, you could, you know, put it into research on low energy things. You could, you know, plant trees. You could do other things to mitigate carbon. I mean, you know, $15. The cost that New York City, for instance, is spending now to reduce each ton of carbon is way more than anybody would ever propose as a carbon tax. It's just a very expensive way to do very little good.
So what are you proposing? Bottom line here, John, scrap the recycling bins or leave them out for paper and metal and glass and the rest, never mind, or the organic stuff, never mind, what?
I would say don't set any arbitrary goals nationally or for a state or anything like that. You know, leave it up to each municipality to figure out what the local economics are, you know, which things make sense and which things don't. And don't make it a religion. You know, don't say that, I mean, the zero waste thing makes zero sense. I mean, you know, the idea that we're going to spend all this money and time just to avoid putting something in a landfill. You know, in New York City, I mean, we could have built dozens of schools with the money that we spent on recycling the last couple of decades.
You're kind of a conservative guy. Is this religion for you? Is it political for you? Is this a libertarian John statement?
Well, no. I mean, I do believe in letting, you know, markets decide things on these things, but you do have to take into account environmental considerations. But, I mean, when you really look at the at the bottom line environmentally and how much you're doing for how much money you're spending, I think that, you know, that it's more the rational idea that, you know, the idea that you, that somebody should set a goal of 50% or 75% or zero waste, to me that's really just, you know, acting out of a, out of this kind of spiritual idea that, that it's just an inherently good thing to recycle. I mean, I think that people that want to recycle should do it. You should be free to do it. If it makes you feel good, if you like to do it, go ahead. But don't try to make everyone else do it.
John Tierney, you've got us started in a big way. We're grateful for that. John Tierney with the New York Times. Thank you for joining us for a minute today, John.
Thanks very much, Tom.
I want to dive right on in. Let's go to Oakland, California, and Darby Hoover, Senior Resource Specialist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, the NRDC, expert on all this. Darby, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
What do you think about John Tierney's big message? You know what? Bottom line, doesn't really pan out. Let's not be so into recycling. Let's be more judgmental, discerning. Step back.
You know, I'm going to start with what I think John got right. I think John, to the extent that he's saying we should find ways to make recycling less expensive and less carbon intensive, absolutely, I agree with that. That system can be improved.
Those big trucks lumbering around with all the recycled stuff in back and the rest.
Well, we'll get to that, but okay. You know, the trucks are going to carry the same amount of waste away from the home.
Well, that's true.
Put it into a recycling truck or a garbage truck. If
you're
recycling, you need fewer garbage trucks, or they can make a larger route. So I think there's some ways to parse out some of these benefits that show that on the whole, really, recycling is still both economically and environmentally beneficial. But I think acknowledging that we do have some improvements to make in the recycling system is not the same as saying we should jettison the system entirely or jettison it for certain materials. You know, another thing John, I think, gets right is that recycling shouldn't be a goal in and of itself. Absolutely. I think we need to think of recycling as a part of a bigger paradigm. And whether we want to call that paradigm zero waste or whether we want to call it something like the traditional waste hierarchy of reduce, reuse, recycle, it's part of a larger system where we rethink what's waste in the first place, how to stop creating products and packages in a way that destines them to become waste, and how to rethink our production and consumption in ways that are healthier for the environment and economically better as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about recycling and how it's working or not working today, whether recycling is still worth it. It is a daily part of many, many, many people's lives and an act of kind of affirmation for the earth, the planet, the environment, and all the rest. There are critics out there now as well, raising big questions. Darby Hoover is with us today from the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, Senior Resource Specialist there. We'll talk in just a moment with an economist who has looked very closely at this in the U.S. and around the world. You can join us. Do you presume it all adds up when you're separating your garbage into recycling and otherwise? Do you assume it adds up that there's a net benefit environmentally, economically? Do you believe your sorting bins are helping you do good in this world? What if it's a close call? Or sometimes some would say, what if it's not? Can you picture recycling as a net economic loss or even sometimes a net environmental loss? Do you even want to consider it? A lot of energy has gone the other way. Here's a radio ad, 2013. The Ad Council put it out in Keep America Beautiful. Its goal, try to make recycling a daily social norm for all, especially the next generation, and looking at all the things recycled materials can become.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm fleece on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I want to be a rocking chair on a sunny porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be
a... 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 I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle.
That sounds great, and I am into it. But I also want to understand it. This John Tierney's essay made me think, and I kind of want to know in more detail what's going on. Darby Hoover is with us from the NRDC. She is says, look, sure, we can think about this, but she's also strongly into recycling. Darby, stand by in Oakland, California. I want to bring Thomas Kinnaman in as well, professor of economics at Bucknell University. He's done a lot of research into the costs and benefits of recycling and other ways of disposing of waste. Joins us today from Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Thomas Kinnaman, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Now, you say you often get painted as the anti-green guest, but you don't really have a horse, a dog in that fight, a horse in that race, green, not green. You're just looking at the numbers. How do you do it, and what do you see?
Well, you know, I began studying recycling and solid waste systems maybe over a decade ago, and I kind of agree with the way it's been presented. Is it's been sort of a sort of a leap of faith that, that these things are good are good for the environment and the economy. And I always felt that way. But then the research question came to me, is that maybe we should be looking at this more carefully. Obviously, these recycling programs cost money. I think the budgets of plenty of municipalities bear that out. But we do save space at the landfills, and landfills are not good for the environment. And we also, with recycled materials, get to do less mining of raw materials. And that's, you know, mining processes are not very good for the environment.
That all sounds great, but your work is being cited to argue against recycling.
Well, it's the results suggest that the optimal recycling rate is about 10%, to make that clear. And that is...
Overall, the U.S. is around 35% total right now, right? Germany is 65%. You say do less?
The results say do, yeah, sure. You know, because you want to measure these things. I think a lot of the recycling initiatives that began back in the 1980s were launched without a clear understanding of what these the magnitude of these benefits and costs were. I don't know, maybe it was two against one, and so recycling made sense. But
we want to test your bottom line. How do you come to that? What are the numbers that you put in? What are the numbers that you get out?
Well, I rely a lot on the life cycle literature that is produced by civil and environmental engineers. What they do, and I don't want to bore the audience too much with this, but what they do is they look at an entire system. Every mile that a truck is placed on the road, every molecule of carbon or sulfur or other air pollutant or water pollutant that comes from these systems, and adds them all up, and you end up with a table of all of the environmental impacts of a recycling system and a waste system.
You know what? You're not boring us. We want you to explain that a little further because people are really devoted to recycling. Here, people are writing on Twitter. Justin just wrote, "Man, I love recycling. I'm being devastated right now via On Point Radio." So people want to understand this. Dig in.
Sure. Well, it's you know these life cycle models are done for all kinds of products, for all kinds of things around the world. It's a very well established. You know, method of research. And all I've done as an economist is try to monetize some of those things. So what does each
like what?
Molecule of carbon, for example, the life cycle model will tell us how much carbon is produced by a recycling system and by a landfill system. And then economists are fairly good at putting dollar values on those things.
So remind us some of the inputs. We've got trucks that are picking this up. But as Darby says, they're going to pick it up if it's garbage anyway. What else would go into your model that would be in the negative side for recycling on carbon production?
Well, one very important thing to remind all of our listeners about this is that recycling systems are all not the same. Might be very different in Los Angeles than it is in New York. Specifically, how far these materials must travel to go from either the landfill or to the recycling area. I know in my area, the landfill is 20 miles away. And some of the cardboard I recycle gets transported 200 or 300 miles away, but that is not. I don't mean to speak for all areas in that regard.
Okay.
And these life cycle models do focus on one area, so there's probably 20 or 30 of them out there. All I've done is average them. So I don't mean to suggest that every municipality is identical, but certain lessons can be learned from comparing the average.
Are all your locales American? Is it that we don't do it as, I don't know, well as Germans or something, or are they international?
Those are questions I can't answer, but we do have some life cycle models that have been done in America, but most of them actually have been done in Europe. I think there was a big debate in Europe over whether incineration or landfilling it was the most preferred environmental and economic way to go, and so this launched a lot of research, and those researchers inevitably included composting and recycling and other options as well. So Europe, Southeast Asia, United States, these are done all over the world.
And you're saying, heave-ho, just send it back to the landfill, never mind all that nice parsing that's been done.
Well, it depends on the material, as John pointed out, and that's made fairly clear in the life cycle literature. We really, Tom, should be recycling all of our aluminum cans.
Okay.
We really should be recycling all of our bimetal soup cans, I would say a lot of the papers, the corrugated and the fiberboard.
Cardboard, yeah.
Yeah, these things are good. Feel good about recycling those things. It's really the plastic and the glass, actually, that don't do too well in these models. And the reason why is the replacement cost. It's really arduous to create new aluminum, not just economically, but also environmentally.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to live next to a strip mine of any kind. Mm-hmm. It turns out making glass and making plastic is just a little easier. And so that benefit, which has always been part of recycling, just is not as substantial for those materials.
But it's more, in the case of plastic, it's more oil out of the ground. It's more fossil fuel, if you will, up and out in the world.
Yeah, it's these are all these are included. You know, and I'm also, you know, it's so you put it all together. And by the way, remember, I'm not just looking at the environmental mm-hmm. benefits. I'm adding those collectively with the economic cost that John mentioned, that this $1 billion that New York City has spent, that has to be spent in good ways. And so to an economist, we put those side by side. So there may be some environmental benefit. Possibly it's negative. And by the way, landfilling itself can have negative environmental benefits. One or two life cycle models have suggested, because they do generate electricity, which displaces coal-based.
Oh, when you say negative, you mean negative in terms of carbon production.
Cost.
That a landfill could actually be a net environmental plus?
In some, you know, again, each life cycle, each landfill is different. But a modern state-of-the-art landfill, this was surprising to me too, Tom, as I was reading that it's primarily the fact that landfills today are built, and not that I want to live next to one, but they're built in such a way that minimizes the water and air pollutions, and they trap this methane, they generate electricity right on site, and they sell this to the grid, which displaces energy production other ways. And so you put all that together, the good and the bad, and in this case, in some cases, the good of the landfill generating electricity exceeds the bad, and that's the other problems that we've talked about.
Tom Kinnaman, stand by. Darby Hoover, come in here. I want to know how you're hearing all this, and please respond in full. I mean, maybe we should start with landfills. Tom says they can be a net plus for the environment if they're modern, state-of-the-art landfills. But for all I know, such things are rare as hen's teeth, as my grandmother used to say. Let's start with landfills and go wherever you will, Darby. This is a perplexing conversation for me, for many, I'm sure.
Great. Well, first I want to say that recycling has two sets of benefits if you're just taking recycling on its own and not considering the greater paradigm of waste reduction and reuse, which I think we should get to.
Okay.
But, you know, as the two kinds of sets of benefits that are associated with recycling, one is the downstream benefits of keeping materials out of landfills. The other are the upstream benefits that are using recovered materials in production to displace the use and harvest of virgin materials in production. That's a really important one, so I do want to get to that, but I'll start with landfills. You know, landfilling derives from behavior that was valid for most of human existence, which is we used to create only biodegradable waste. You could throw it on or in the ground, and nature would essentially take care of it. But once we became industrialized, once we hit the industrial age, we started creating materials that were more complex, that were not biodegradable, that were being created in a greater and greater quantity as population grew. And so we've started trying to account for that by making our holes in the ground more sophisticated. We line them with plastic and clay and all kinds of materials in hopes that we can put things in the hole in the ground and they're not going to leak. The reality is that eventually landfills all leak. They will leak to the air. They will leak to the water. They will leak to groundwater, which is a concern. They will leak methane. Some of them can be capped, and methane can be captured after they're closed.
Yep.
But for the most part, while a landfill is in production, there are active leakages of methane. Landfills are the third largest source of human-derived methane in the United States right now. So this is a real problem. And I think that Tom is noting we can capture that methane and use it for electricity, to which I would say, you know, that's sort of a strange way of extracting the energy from those organic materials by putting them in a landfill. Once you put them in a landfill, you're creating methane that's dirty, it's inefficiently produced, it's hard to capture in full. Instead, why don't we separate out those organics before that time, put them through something like an anaerobic digester where we can both capture some energy benefits without releasing it to the atmosphere, and we can also capture a material that can be used to amend soils.
And to do that, you'd have to recycle. You'd have to get the organic stuff. But I wonder even what percentage of landfills in this country fall into this category that Tom Kinnaman calls modern state-of-the-art landfills that would capture that methane, turn it into energy, be net pluses, he says, to the environment. Is that like one in a million, one in a thousand, one in ten?
Well, I think we have to look at several things there. We have to look at not just number of modern landfills, but what happens to those landfills before and after they're closed? What happens during operation? If you put food waste in your garbage can at home, it already starts to decompose before it even gets to the truck.
So I know that.
And if you're smelling that smell that you associate with food waste rotting, that's methane. So it's already producing methane. So while it gets to the landfill, if it has some layer of cover that they put on daily to try to keep various kinds of nuisances down, that does not prevent that leakage of methane. So while a landfill is in operation, putting organic materials into it causes methane release. That's just a fact of operating landfills. Why don't we instead take those materials and get the highest and best ecological use out of them, as well as economic use, by producing cleaner energy and producing soil amendments and recycling nutrients back into the soil.
Of course, anaerobic digesters, I'm sure they have an economic cost as well. We'll look at that. We're looking at recycling overall and where the bottom line is here economically and environmentally. Let me get a couple of callers in here, and I'll bring it back to you, Tom Kinnaman. Brooke in Boston. Brooke, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot. Yeah. I'm struggling with a lot of things that John Tierney has raised, but first and foremost, while we're on landfills,
okay.
He talks about how there's plenty of space for landfills. No problem. Let's just build more of them. Who wants to live next to a landfill? I think one of your earlier, The Economist, mm-hmm. said he wasn't volunteering to live next to a landfill. In Massachusetts, we have closed over 100 landfills in the last 20 years. These were all landfills that were built in the 30s, 40s, 50s. They were unlined.
What is that in terms of percentage? It's come from what down to what with that, Brooke?
We have about 12 landfills now.
Oh, that's a lot. That's a huge...
Yeah, right. Now landfills now have to have modern liners and leak detection systems.
Yeah.
But we don't know the long-term cost. We are still paying the cost, the environmental cost, of all of the unlined landfills that have been capped. Parks have been built on some of them, and then there have been consequences from those parks. It turns out you can't just...
What about methane? Do you capture methane at many, most, any of your landfills?
Modern landfills will have methane capture systems, but you have to remember that they don't capture all of the methane. There's a certain amount that escapes.
Mm-hmm.
And methane is 70 times more potent than greenhouse gas,
yeah.
carbon dioxide is.
You sound really expert. So what would you do? Would you keep the status quo just the way people are doing it and you're around you, or would you change it in some direction on recycling?
Well, I think that we need, first of all, we need to think about not just the economic benefits of recycling or the cost of recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody questions the cost of picking up garbage and putting it in the hole in the ground or sending it to an incinerator.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a given. It's a public health issue. So recycling seems to be put to a different standard that needs to pay for itself or make money. And so I would say turn the entire argument on its head. That makes no sense at all. Secondly, recycling...
But John and Tom go further and say it's an environmental net loss when you capture in with some of these things. The environmental cost of dealing with recycled stuff.
I've been working in the field for 30 years. I have not. You could probably interview dozens and dozens of people, professionals in the field, and they would say it's it's unsound.
Bunk.
Anybody can find a study to prove their point, but the EPA has documented this. I don't buy it.
Brooke, we've got it. We just got a minute before the break. Tom Kinnaman, let me come to you. I mean, you hear somebody, it sounds like Brooke is in the field and she just doesn't buy it. Do you get that response a lot? Do you have a perfectly satisfying rejoinder to her?
Well, to keep in mind, the results that I achieved combine the economic and the environmental.
Mm-hmm.
And so these some cases where certain products are bad for the environment didn't drive any result that I came up with or that my research team came up with. There are life cycle models that suggest that the environmental impacts of recycling some items in some localities are negative, yeah.
Some localities... Darby, that sounded earlier, though, even though you're right in the middle of promoting this, you're ready to look at changes.
Yeah, but I first want to acknowledge that life cycle analyses can cover a wide variety of scopes and a wide variety of assumptions. So I've seen just as many life cycle analyses that show the clear benefits of recycling even plastics and glass. So I think it's important to note that there are some common sense principles we can put into place here, such as if you put recovered materials back into manufacture, it takes less energy, less water, it produces less pollution to air and water, produces less global warming pollution. Across the board, we're seeing that from another set of life cycle analyses, including EPA's WARM model. So I think...
Darby, hold the thought. We have to take a short break. We'll come right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking recycling. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about recycling and how it's working or not working today, whether recycling is still worth it. My guest Darby Hoover with the Natural Resources Defense Council says yes, yes, yes. Let's look at how we can be more sophisticated about it. Let's look at waste reduction. Let's look at reuse. But yes to recycling. Thomas Kinnaman, professor of economics at Bucknell University, has looked at data coming in from around the world, not just in the U.S., and says, well, net-net, economically and environmentally, it's not always such a clear call. A lot of people writing to us online here. DJ is going with your theme there, Darby. DJ writes, reduce, reuse, recycle. These are the three things we should all be doing. Only one of them requires help from outside infrastructure, incurring those costs. On the other hand, here's another listener says, look, it's become hard to, on the website, it's become hard to justify buying used clothing and home goods at thrift shops, reuse, when basic consumer goods are so inexpensive and convenient, brand new, in big box USA. And Phil writes to us, ultimately, recycling is essential because we have to move from a linear resource economy to a cyclical one. Whenever possible, our economy should mirror nature, since nature has no waste. In the end, everything should be reused or recycled. I mean, Darby, I've seen the argument made that recycling may even encourage not reuse but new use because, you know, when you buy that plastic stuff or paper or metal, you think, well, I'm going to recycle it, so let's just buy more new stuff and into recycling it goes and I feel fine.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we haven't talked about yet is that we're operating within a reality of finite natural resources or limited natural resources. There's only a certain amount of resources that our planet can produce with the current and growing population on it. So thinking about ways to be thoughtful in our use of resources to ensure that there are enough natural resources for future generations is a big responsibility, and I think that's exactly where recycling fits in. You're absolutely right that recycling is not the only thing we should be doing. We should be looking at a larger picture, which is what the zero waste paradigm really does. Zero waste says, what if we didn't create waste? What would that look like, and what kind of systems of production and consumption would we need to create for that to happen? So we want to acknowledge that there's benefits of recycling compared to manufacturing using virgin materials, reduces the use of energy, reduces the use of water, saves global warming pollution, et cetera. But you save even more resources if you don't consume that item in the first place. So, you know, I'm not advocating for giving up all consumerism and going and living in a cave with animal skins. I am, unless that sounds good to you. But I am saying that we can
really be
thoughtful about what we consume, how we produce what we consume. And one important piece is that we've got to bring producers into this conversation. So producers who make packages that are increasingly complex.
Yeah.
That are made from multiple materials, often fused together, are not currently recyclable or are very difficult or expensive to recycle. Let's bring producers into the conversation to talk about how to pay for and how to manage their products at the end of their useful life and how to design those products in the first place so that they maximize renewable materials, they don't over-rely on non-renewable fossil fuel-derived materials, for example, that they really allocate materials to a thoughtful and best use, including thinking about how we can keep them out of disposal at the end of their useful life.
A couple of calls here, and I want to go to Sandra Van Linden, who's thought about the social psychological angle on recycling. He'll join us in a second. First, Rebecca in Lexington, Kentucky. Thank you for calling, Rebecca. You're on.
Hi. Basically, I come from the industry as well as one of the previous callers.
What do you mean by the industry, Rebecca? Waste management or something?
Waste management, and in the public sector, and I've managed the material recovery facility, which is a recycling center, basically.
Okay.
And I concur with portions of both arguments, having seen what modern recycling has turned into.
Okay.
The influence of the Chinese market really caused a boom in recycling markets over the last decade.
What do you mean? When we were sending shiploads of cardboard over there or waste metal?
Oh, yeah. I mean, waste steel, aluminum, plastics.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a dumping ground. Our material recovery facilities weren't working too well. We were producing a lot of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And they quit buying it about 2.5-3 years ago.
Because it was too corrupted? It wasn't just metal? I mean, there was too much junk in there? Or what?
We were sending them very poor quality products.
Yeah.
We were selling them contaminated product.
Yeah.
And the Green Fence program basically stopped a lot of that material coming in. And so the market in the U.S. has had to try to absorb much of that material that was historically going into China.
Yep.
And so market prices in the U.S. are quite depressed.
For recycled material, okay.
For aluminum, many of the plastics, paper's doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the premise that I agree with on the environmental side is we should be trying to keep material out of landfills to the best of our ability.
What does that mean?
And
buying less? Reusing? Is that what you're getting
all
to?
Of it. Mm-hmm. All of it. Reduce, reuse, design better packages, think things through better. Because, I mean, landfills are expensive. You have to build them. You have to monitor them. You have to close them at the end of life cycle.
Yep.
And then you have to monitor them for years afterwards because the technology is imperfect. Yeah, mm-hmm. they're much better than they were 50 years ago, but they use plastic liners, and plastic liners can get damaged. You can have all sorts of problems develop in landfills.
Sure, I can imagine. Yeah.
And so they're not a cheap solution. And so I think we should be parsimonious in all of our approaches. The big problem that I have is that because China, and this is a personal opinion, because China was buying so much material in the 2000s up through probably the last 3 years, we were trying to maximize our recycling production in many communities, private sector, both public sector and private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And we shifted to what's called a single stream system in many cities. And these are multi-million dollar, highly technical recycling systems.
Where you've got paper and glass and metal and everything in there going in one bin.
Yeah, and the issue that I saw as managing a MRF is that the minute you tell somebody that put it all in one bin, they get very creative and they go, well, I can either put this in the trash or I can put it in the recycling bin. And they tend to vote for the recycling bin because they think they're being virtuous.
Mm-hmm.
And not understanding that when it gets to the plant that I'm operating, it gets dangerous for the employees. We had explosive devices come through.
Oh, jeez.
Because
they were metal, somebody thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we actually had a bomb come through one time. And
thanks a lot.
So, you know, that seems to be idiocy that somebody would think that that was recyclable, and perhaps nobody knew what it was, but we had to shut the plant down for hours to remediate a bomb that was on the recycling platform.
Rebecca, our time is growing short, but you give us a very palpable sense of the complexity of this. Why reduce and reuse really sound like good ideas. I mean, okay, maybe recycle carefully, but the idea that we can just toss every sort of recyclable thing blindly away and think that is working, not so obvious. One more call, and I want to bring Sander Van Linden in. David in Bloomington, Illinois. David, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call and call guests. I was just calling because I am also in the industry, but I'm on the front line of things to where I actually will do a route, and then every other week we offer free recycling here.
But this is picking up garbage or recycled materials or both?
Yeah, both. And when I had talked to your screener earlier, I was saying how out of about all of our customers, I would have to fairly say that zero of them do it correctly to where you can throw away the recycling, will come through and in the garbage, but you will see the exact same things in both bins to where it almost seems to be like it's where of a keeping up with the Joneses, my neighbors are recycling, I'm going to do it too. But when it comes down to the actual efforts, it seems like maybe the instructions are like your last caller just said, we don't have bombs go through, but we have, you know, items that should not be going through.
So zero out of how many customers roughly do it correctly? Zero out of?
3,000.
Oh, that is not too good. Okay, recyclers of the world, clean up your act. You know, get it right if you want it to be economical or even environmentally effective. David in Bloomington, Illinois, I appreciate your call. If I may, Tom Kinnaman, Darby Hoover, let me go quickly to Sander van Linden. Social psychologist directs the Social and Environmental Decision-Making Lab at Princeton University. We tracked him down today in Bogota, Colombia, no less. Sander van Linden, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be on the show, Tom.
You say that there's something important about recycling, even when it's imperfect, even when maybe the numbers don't add up perfectly. What is that thing, Sander?
Indeed, I think recycling is an incredibly important behavior, at least psychologically, because as has been said on the show, it really demonstrates the impact of our consumer and production processes for people, and it highlights our individual responsibility to try to manage the massive amounts of waste that we produce. So it's a behavior that makes people conscious about the product and consumer life cycles that were mentioned, and it highlights our individual role within that cycle. And so it really puts people in touch with the environmental aspects of our behaviors, and it also highlights that we are dealing with a finite amount of resources and the idea that we need to take care of the resources that we have, that we need to conserve resources, and that we need to think intelligently about what we do with our products after we consume them. And that's one part of why, psychologically, at least, recycling is important. The second part I wanted to highlight is that at least my research and that of my colleagues has shown acts as an important gateway behavior. And so people often start with recycling, and then there's what we call positive spillovers. And people tend to, you know, recycling is often a stepping stone to learning about environmental consciousness and promoting other environmental behaviors that are good for the environment. And so it's often a first behavior that leads to many other behaviors. And so when I read Tierney's article, at least my response was that some of this information that he produced in the article can have very negative consequences in the sense that there's also something we call negative spillovers. That now, let's say that people might conceive that recycling could be inefficient, mm-hmm. and then people take that knowledge and apply it to a whole other set of environmental behaviors that they think, oh, maybe those behaviors are inefficient too. And so this can have very negative consequences on people's, on a whole range of behaviors. So I think we need to think carefully, at least in terms of the behavioral impact that certain information has on what we do before we conclude that, you know, recycling is inefficient or we should be moving our waste to landfills. Because landfills don't really illustrate a concept of sustainability and environmental consciousness. It's mm-hmm. essentially suggesting that we can stuff our garbage, you know, deep inside the earth and that we no longer have to think about it. So especially when we deal with these environmental problems that are long-term, that require long-term engagement from people, I think making every effort to make sure that, you know, everyone's engaged with the issue mm-hmm. is important, and that's why I think recycling is important.
Tom Kinnaman, how about it? Do you worry sometimes that your research, if people, you know, read it and then John Tierney digests it and says recycling doesn't add up and people start to do less, and pretty soon your perhaps well-intended research turns Americans into, you know, consumerist monsters who just don't think twice about what they buy or toss?
Interesting question, Tom. And I do consider myself an environmentalist, and I do lots of things. Mm-hmm. I ride my bicycle to work every day, and I don't
Bravo,
keep my thermostat
sir.
Up too high. So these
yeah.
are all, and so yet I'm still though a scientist, and I still want to see the numbers. I've thought a lot about this gateway aspect that recycling. Once we start recycling, then we become environmental agents, and we take this to other parts of our lives, and this positive spillover effect. I would love to see more data on that, because I think the other possibility is that people recycle and then they've kind of atoned for their sins. They've shed their problem, and then they still drive to inefficiently to some places, or, you know, in other words, they've They've absolved themselves of environmental responsibility once they've done something like recycling.
So now I'll drive a Hummer and it's all fine.
Who knows? I do think, though, you know, we talk about allocating resources to where we can really improve the environment the best. I would love to see, you know, we've put a lot of effort into recycling more for these kids and everything. You know, can we change transportation habits? Can we change, you know, home energy use habits? I'm just guessing. I haven't done the numbers on these, but I'm guessing this will provide additional environmental benefits than trying to find something to do with a plastic bottle.
Darby Hoover put a bow on it for us. There's the notion that recycling might be a sop, that, you know, we do that and then we feel righteous, and there are a lot of other things that we ought to do that we don't. On the other hand, you hear Sanders saying it's a gateway to potentially positive behavior. What are the changes you'd recommend to the way we do things now, and your final assessment of the net effect here, Darby?
Well, no one single behavior is going to solve all our environmental problems, but they all add up. And recycling is one of the best illustrations that the actions of an individual can make a difference. An individual person or an individual organization. One of the places I've seen great changes is in the corporate sector, where companies that start environmental initiatives almost always start with recycling. And that absolutely, as Sander was saying, opens the door for an entire company to rethink things like energy use, transportation, and other kinds of environmental initiatives. So recycling is a piece of a puzzle. It's an essential piece of the puzzle, not just to keep things out of landfills, but to redirect those materials back into production where the environmental and economic savings are vast, and where we have the potential to help conserve resources and create a new model so that we preserve our planet and what's available on it for future generations.
But it does sound to me, Darby, like you don't have a problem with people poking around in here to look at what really makes sense and what doesn't, to do some careful discerning as we go about it.
Absolutely. I'm a scientist, too, and I like numbers as well. And the more I poke into numbers, the more I see that there are different sets of numbers. So I think it's very important to balance those with local information, global information, what makes common sense, and some basic principles around resource sustainability.
We're going to come at this with a more discriminating eye as we buy and use and reuse and, yes, toss and recycle. And we're grateful for that. Darby Hoover, Senior Resource Specialist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, joining us today from Oakland, California. Darby, thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Sander van der Linden in Bogota, Colombia, but out of Princeton University. Sander, wonderful to have you with us today.
Great to be here.
And Tom Kinnaman at Bucknell University. Thanks for your work, Tom. Keep us informed.
You're very welcome, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.